Welcome to the Starsology Astrology Podcast. I am your host, Arwen O'Neill, and I'm here with my friend Katya today.
Hello, Arwen. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. So today we are going to be doing something a little bit different. And I think I say that a lot, but this is actually quite a bit different from what we've done in our transit podcasts. This is going to be about one of the questions that recently came up. And this was in our 75th episode extravaganza Q&A.
Congratulations, 75 episodes.
Yay.
Big deal.
It is pretty awesome. But someone had asked, they were confused about aspects and the conjunctions, oppositions, squares. It gets pretty confusing. Mm-hmm. And we sort of gloss over that because who knows what the level of knowledge mm-hmm. is of all of our listeners. But every once in a while, it's good to go back and really just do a basic recap. And I thought one of the best ways to understand, and of course, if anyone is listening who is more of a seasoned astrologer and you're thinking, well, there are way more than five aspects. Yes, yes, yes. But we're going to focus on the major aspects or the Ptolemaic aspects, which is, you know,
Exactly.
Oh. That's just another word for major aspect. Okay. And it was based on Ptolemy, who was like an astronomer from back in the day, ancient times. And we are going to be just going through the basic five conjunctions, oppositions, squares, sextiles, and trines. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go through the same two planets in all of those aspects and just describe what the difference is and give examples and look at some charts, or not charts, but people in the public eye who have these different aspects. Mm-hmm. It's funny because when I was looking at these celebrities, I was like, is there a unifying factor? And you might not really see that there's like that much difference between someone who has a conjunction and has the opposition, and that might be even more confusing. But at the same time, it's more about like what it feels like in their life. You know, we know celebrities by what movies they're in or what they've accomplished or the mm-hmm. books they've written or whatever, but we don't really know what it's like to be them. So it's kind of hard to say, well, oh, this, you know, person seems like the conjunction is acting more like an opposition in their chart. Well, they might have gone through a great deal of effort in their life to make the most of whatever this difficult aspect is. So maybe they have the opposition of Mercury and Mars, like they've been very combative and argumentative all their life, and they've really tried to ameliorate that and to make it a more productive part of their life. Mm-hmm. So now, as like, you know, someone who is an adult and they're famous, maybe they seem like a really easygoing and pleasant person, but they've had to work really hard with this difficult aspect in their chart, right? So that's one of the shortcomings of looking at celebrities as an example, because we don't always really know what they're actually like.
Absolutely.
You know, we know them, but we don't.
They've got people to tell them what kind of image they exude.
Right, exactly. And a lot of famous people have worked very, very hard on, you know, overcoming difficulties in childhood. Yeah. One of the things that probably drives people to be famous is some kind of difficulty in, you know, unless of course their whole family is famous and they're part of like an entertainment empire. But, you know, a lot of people who are famous have, as I think it was Robert Downey Jr. in his acceptance speech for the Oscars, said, I'd like to thank my difficult childhood. So yeah, that's a thing. That's a real thing.
Or recently I heard John Mayer say that, he feels like he's America's ex-boyfriend.
That's
just like the personality that the country has put on him.
Right.
And he's like, I have no choice but to accept that because I'm not here going to change the minds of a whole country.
Right.
If
that's
they decide
hilarious.
Something about me.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Wow. That's super interesting. Mars and Mercury, and they move pretty quickly. So this is, it's interesting to do this episode about those two planets, I think, because we're never really going to talk in transit, you know, episodes about Mercury. Yeah. It moves way too quickly. There's
like,
not any point.
How quickly are we talking about? Like a day quickly or like minutes quickly? Like what are we talking
about? It's one of those where if you don't know the time that you were born, you can't know the exact position. It's one of those. It doesn't move as fast as the moon because the moon moves around the earth. You know, it goes like every couple of hours. It's a different, you know, position. But with Mercury, it's like, it's such a fleeting transit that you wouldn't really be like, oh, Mercury is, you know, I mean, if it's in aspect to Pluto or something like that, that would make more sense. But Mars and Mercury, the conjunctions or whatever, they're very fleeting. I mean, you'd look at it in your own chart if it's like Mars is affecting your Mercury and be like, oh, that's maybe I'll feel combative today. Mm-hmm. But it wouldn't be like everyone in the world is. You know,
okay. So yeah. It's like a little blip.
It's a blip. Okay. It's a blip. Sometime in the day you're like, oh, mm-hmm. you know, but it's a great example to give because mm-hmm. we're going to just talk about not what it's like in a transit, but what it's like in people's charts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's really quickly do sort of an overview of what aspects are. Like,
yes,
what
please.
Is an aspect?
Yeah.
And of course, here I'm going to talk about The Inner Sky by Stephen Forrest, one of my favorite books to quote. He says, if signs, planets, and houses are the basic words in the astrological language, then aspects are the laws of grammar and syntax that govern how those words have to be hooked together to make sentences that make sense. So aspects represent the first solid step towards making a full-blown, coherent astrological sentence. Mm-hmm. So they kind of, they're the glue that holds the signs, planets, and houses together into a coherent narrative.
Mm-hmm. Hold on, I need to write this down.
We're okay. going to have show notes. You can
all
consult
perfect.
Those. Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Yeah. And so what is an aspect? It's an angle that describes mm-hmm. the relationship between two planets. So if you're looking at the sky mm-hmm. at the time of someone's birth, you're seeing like a little map mm-hmm. of where all the planets were at that second when they were born. The second that they first took a breath as a baby, that's their chart, is that mm-hmm. that snapshot. And if you have the moon over here mm-hmm. and you have the sun over here, mm-hmm. they might be opposite each other because one of them is at the exact 180 degree point from the other. So that's an opposition. And if they're occupying the same space in the sky, that's a conjunction. And if they're 90 degrees apart, so it's a circle and there's a center point of the circle, which is based on what time you were born. Mm-hmm. So you look at the center and that's the chart and you have the 12 houses going around it. If two planets are 90 degrees apart, that's a square. Mm. And if they're 60 degrees apart, that's a sextile. And if they're 120 degrees apart, that's a trine. Okay. So it's all about numbers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And conjunct is 0 degrees.
Zero.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So that makes it pretty easy. And mm-hmm. and of course, there are all these minor aspects. There's 180. There's blah, blah, blah. We're not going to get into that. Mm-hmm. That's something for another day. These are just the major aspects, and there's five of them. So that okay. makes it pretty basic and simple to begin our discussion about the examples of Mercury and Mars.
Okay.
Yeah. So a conjunction is 0 degrees. That means the two planets are occupying the same spot. And what does that mean in your chart? Well, that means that the two planets' energies are combined. Mm-hmm. They express themselves as one. If there's a transit of like Pluto, it's going to affect both of those planets at the same time. So if Pluto is conjunct in transit to, okay, so let's back up. Mm-hmm. If you have Mercury and Mars, because that's the two planets we're going to be talking about today. If you have them conjunct in your natal chart mm-hmm. and Pluto comes around and touches one of those planets, it's going to touch both of them at the same time. So anytime that a transiting planet touches either of your two conjunct planets, mm-hmm. it's going to affect them at the same time.
Okay.
So conjunctions are really powerful. They're the most powerful of all of the aspects. And it makes
so
sense
it's a
because
strong bond, it amplifies the qualities
totally.
For better or for worse, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. And it depends on the nature of the two planets as well. So if you have a conjunction of Venus, it's going to act differently than Mars because it just has a different nature.
Mm-hmm.
So Mars is more combative naturally and Venus is obviously more of a loving and relationshipy and beauty oriented mm-hmm. thing. So anything that's Venus conjunction is going to be a naturally kind of softer, nicer kind of energy mm-hmm. than Mars. But yeah, and it also depends on what sign they're in. So it's a lot of wiggle room and a lot of things that sort of alter the nature of a conjunction. But
yeah.
basically it means that they act as one, those two planets.
And not to get too esoteric about this, but if, you know, being born at a certain time mm-hmm. versus planning when you are born,
right?
Something that you have no control
right.
over, but somebody else would.
Yeah.
Would that change?
I mean,
or you were always meant to be born at a certain time.
Yeah, I mean that's a valid question.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly is becoming more. When I was born 50 years ago, you just kind of were born when you were born. I mean, there were C sections, obviously, but
mm-hmm.
they didn't kind of plan them as much.
Mm-hmm.
It was usually if something went wrong with
yeah.
the natural birth, then they would induce labor or they would go in and do an emergency C-section or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, it's almost more common that you just decide what's a convenient mm-hmm. time, mm-hmm. you know, with the approximate day that the birth is due.
Mm-hmm. So it's close, but it's not at the right second.
Right.
Right. So, or like it could possibly be not at the right second.
Exactly. That, you know? Yeah. And it's interesting because most births now will happen around midday.
Yeah.
And it used to be that people could be born, you know, in the middle of the night or yeah. that still yeah. happens, obviously, yeah, yeah. but it's much more common now for someone to be born sometime in the middle of the day, which means that the rising sign is mostly going to be between like noon and, I don't know, like 5 p.m. or whatever mm-hmm. it was convenient yeah. for the doctor, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that means that there are certain rising signs that are going to be much more rare mm-hmm. these days. Being born around midnight is just going to be so much more rare now than it was like 50 years ago.
So are we affecting, like, are we playing with fate? Like, are we able to actually control fate in that moment? Or is it that it was always meant to be whenever it was meant to be?
That's a great question. It's a very philosophical question, yeah. you know, but it's interesting too, because mm-hmm. there's certain things that affect, you know, generational personalities mm-hmm. and like the personality of an era. Like if you think of certain personality traits that were very common 100 years ago, mm-hmm. there's definitely a change, right? Like people are more, probably more open-minded now overall,
yeah.
you know, probably more adventure seeking, mm-hmm. more ambitious. Overall, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure that there were very ambitious farmers and shoemakers and, mm-hmm. you know, oh, whatever, yeah. Cowboys and seamstresses and things like that, which, you know, common jobs back then. But overall, I think people nowadays tend to be more, you might say, narcissistic. And that's interesting because the sun in the 10th house is much more common if you are born around noon, right? Mm-hmm. And the 10th house is the house of fame and your face to the outside world. Mm-hmm. So that is a very apt correlation that has occurred because people are being born in midday.
Yeah.
And that means that the sun will be at the highest point in the sky.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if I could challenge narcissistic tendency or something that people might fall into based on this conjunction, mm-hmm. if it's less about narcissism and more about now we've got more autonomy.
Yeah.
And so we can govern ourselves
totally
individually much better. And yeah, relative to, say, a female, you know, in the 1800s,
right.
like that's a huge difference.
Oh, exactly.
What we're able to think for ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, you know, when I say narcissism, it's like, that's the darker side of it. But the positive side is that we do have more autonomy. We have more opportunity to be enterprising
mm-hmm.
and men and women,
but
definitely women way more than they used to.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely something that's occurred with that more daytime oriented sort of, the sun.
Which is funny because, not to bring it back to yin yang, but daytime is very yang energy, very driven, very energetic, much more masculine
for sure.
And so I guess it would make sense that it would do that. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely, okay. absolutely. And that's like, as women have definitely taken more of an active role in public life, they have obviously taken on more traditionally masculine or yang sort of mm-hmm. qualities, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting.
Cool.
Yeah.
How about sextile? So conjunct 0 degrees, sextile and 60.
Okay. So the sextile is mm-hmm. when two planets are 60 degrees apart or two signs apart. So for example, Virgo and Scorpio, Aries and Gemini, Sagittarius and Aquarius. Stephen Forrest says that with the sextile, it's often considered like a watered down trine. But in fact, it's actually quite distinct, and it produces more excitement, more intensity, more colorful and dynamic stimulation. So there's a sense of humor and enthusiasm and restlessness, but in a positive way, like mm-hmm. the feeling of falling in love, dancing, or laughing.
Oh,
I know.
That sounds lovely.
It does. Yeah. It sounds amazing. And with a trine, mm-hmm. it's 120 degrees apart. So these are also a soft aspect or easy aspect. And in fact, it's kind of the easiest of all of the aspects, the trine. It's the key word for a trine is flowing. Uh-huh. So this is it's when two signs are in the same element. So two water signs, two fire signs, two air signs, or two earth signs. It's the allies kind of thing. It's not necessarily like a passionate aspect, mm-hmm. but it's like you have so much in common and it's just easygoing and flowing.
Yeah, and a little effort.
Yeah, exactly. They support each other well. It's not always passionate, but it also can be a wasted energy sometimes because it flows together so easily that you can take it for granted.
Oh.
And that's if it's in your own chart or if it's in a relationship. So if you have a lot of trines in your relationship, it might just be like the kind of relationship where it's super easygoing. You can just sit on the couch together. You don't even have to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you have a lot in common. You have the same kinds of interests, the same kinds of friends, and that kind of stuff.
You're so compatible that you almost become lazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
The couples who end up looking, you know, exactly like each other as they get older.
I actually know a couple like this. They go to the same barber. They That's both funny. Have short hair.
Yeah.
And they just go to the same barber. And it's so easy for them.
Totally.
But
just like, we'll both take the same.
Yeah.
I find people end up looking like their pets sometimes too, which is hilarious.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
Yeah.
I see that more often than people looking like each other.
But. Yeah. And it's funny, you don't ever think like someone is going out and getting a pet because it looks like them.
Yeah, yeah.
But there must be some subconscious thing that's at work there.
Have you ever thought what your pet would look like? Or like what your...
Yeah, I mean, yeah for sure. Yeah. Oh. Like,
Are you willing to share?
I do like a long-haired cat. I mean, that is a good...
Do you think you look alike?
I mean, I do have long hair.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, and you have cat-like tendencies.
I shed a lot. Yeah, exactly.
You're very agile.
Well, thank you. Exactly. I'm not as easily spooked as most cats, though, I don't
think. Thank goodness.
Yeah. How annoying would that be? Come into the room and I just run away. Vomit uncontrollably. Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Okay. Yes, we love cats. Anyway, so yeah, that's the sextiles and trines. They're similar, but actually quite different as well.
Okay.
Shall we jump into the examples, or let's go through all of the aspects first, and then we'll...
I was like, I have a question about squares and oppositions.
Amazing. Okay, so let's do that next. Which one do you want to do first?
Well, maybe square. I remember you saying 90 degrees.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's 90 degrees. So it's like there's four quadrants in... the chart, so it's basically like it makes an X, and the ones that are at the point of the, so make an X with your hands.
X with my hands. Okay, done.
Where your fingers are, your fingertips, that's square to each other.
Ah, okay. Yeah. 90 degrees, I see.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And where your elbow is in comparison to your fingers of the same hand, that's an opposition.
Oh, that's a good way to...
Yeah, I just thought of that.
Nice. Well done.
And you can follow along at home.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Is it March 28th already?
Call back.
Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. So 180 degrees apart means they're exactly the opposite. So that would be like Taurus and Scorpio are the opposite. Virgo and Pisces are opposites. Aries and Libra are opposites.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't get much more opposite, but like the old saying goes, opposites attract.
Yeah.
And so oppositions are actually a little bit less difficult than squares. So there's a polarization, but it's also kind of the thing where each sign brings what the other lacks.
Oh.
So it's not necessarily just about opposites attracting. It's like they, when they come together, they can actually create a whole that's greater than the sum of their parts because you're bringing what the other person or the other sign doesn't have.
So deeper understanding through confrontation?
Yeah, exactly. That could totally be. Okay. And the keywords are tension and polarization, but not friction.
Oh.
Because they're opposites, so they don't kind of rub against each other in a way. Like it's a metaphor, but but basically this is describing the difference between an opposition and a square. And the square is a more difficult tension because it's almost like when you come to an intersection where two cars are trying to cross.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you're going opposite each other, you just go by each other.
Yeah.
But if you're coming up to an intersection and you're next to the other car, you kind of, you know, if there's no like signal light to tell you when to go, you kind of have to make eye contact, be like, is it me? Yeah. Is it you? Is it me? Is it you? And then you both go at the same time and you crash.
I think there might be rules against that or for that, like the right of way.
It's not the perfect metaphor.
Got it.
Yeah.
But how is it that there could be so much polarization, so much confrontation, so much opposition, and yet no friction? That seems magical to me. How do you not have that?
It's interesting. I mean, oppositions are kind of a weird, like they're considered the second most powerful of the, so conjunctions and oppositions, and not to, I don't want to get into orbs because orbs is a whole nother can of worms. That is definitely like an intermediate level topic. But basically when we think of how strong an aspect is, Mm-hmm. Conjunctions are the strongest, like by far. So astrologers will usually consider an aspect exact is like 0 degrees. They're like right on top of each other. Mm-hmm. If you have 20 degrees Taurus, you both have, 20 degree Taurus, like they're conjunct, exactly mm-hmm. conjunct. Mm-hmm. But you would consider it still a conjunction if one was like 20 degrees Taurus and the other was like 28 degrees Taurus. Mm-hmm. So eight degrees off is still considered a conjunction. With an opposition, you also take about 8 degrees. With a square, you would only do like four or five in order to make it an exact
square. See. Okay.
If you have two planets that are like 10 degrees off of a square, it's not a square.
Oh, okay.
4 degrees is a square.
Oh, okay. So there's some wiggle room.
There's some wiggle room. Yeah, okay. Exactly. And a lot of astrologers will actually kind of wiggle orbs like bigger or smaller depending on what their preference is, and you're setting up your software or whatever, and some astrologers will like go 10 degrees for a conjunction and opposition, 8 degrees even for a square. That's a little much.
Is it up for debate?
Oh, it's super up for debate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's one of those things in astrology which is definitely up for debate. And some people get super heated about it.
Yeah. Oh,
it's hilarious.
Drama.
Some people are very strict about it, like squares only 4 degrees, not a minute more.
Yeah.
And conjunctions, that's like 8 degrees, absolutely that's it. But maybe if it's the sun and the moon and the ascendant, they'll go up to 10.
Ah, okay.
And there, I had some software on my old laptop, my beloved old laptop that has all my great software. It was called Janus. Janus is one of my favorite astrology programs. And you can get so into the details. You can change every little aspect. You can change it per planet if you want. Like, so if you're like, I'm super into Venus and any Venus aspect, I want it to be like 2 degrees bigger, orbs, and you can change it for relationship charts versus like if you are super into doing synastry charts or, composite charts, you can have different
synastry.
Yeah. That's when you compare two charts and you lay them on top of each other.
Is it at all related to sinister?
No, but that's a good, I wonder, let's look up synastry. It's S-Y-N-A-S-T-R-Y. Let's see what the etymology of that is. I'm a big etymology nerd.
Yeah. So overall, would you say that the closer to the exact degrees, the more potent the
influence?
Oh, okay.
100%.
So that's just how it works.
That is exactly how it works. Yeah.
I see.
And a lot of the time, if you're looking at your chart and you're looking at all of the aspects in a list, the way you want to maybe put it in order, sometimes you put it in order by planet, so you can see all of the sun aspects together, all the moon aspects together. That's one way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
But probably my favorite way of looking at it is the strongest aspects first.
Oh, okay.
So the zero orbs, if you have a conjunction and it's like literally your sun and your moon are both exactly at 10 degrees Virgo, that's going to be the most powerful aspect in your chart. And then the ones that are like the weakest are like, maybe 9 degrees difference, whatever, like depending on how, if it's a conjunction or a trine or whatever.
I wonder if people listening to this are just going insane, thinking like, just yelling from wherever it is that they are.
They're
like, But I think this is what's so beautiful about this, that you can have this heated debate and hopefully respectfully.
100%.
It's cool to hear what people are attached to.
Well, exactly. And this is why, The free sites where you can put in your chart and stuff like that are great. But if you are an astrologer and you're doing people's charts, that's obviously why you want to invest and have your own software.
Yeah.
Because then you can muck around and do all those little changes and make it exactly how you want it.
Yeah.
So that when a chart comes out, you're not going, wait a minute, the moon isn't, conjunct blah, 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 at such and such degree.
Yeah.
No, it's going to always come out the way you believe it should and what is meaningful to you. And it's not,
And is this a bias that would just make you feel better? Or is this...
I mean, it definitely will change what the chart turns out.
Yeah.
Like if you put in, if you go to a certain website, and this is funny too, this happened to my mother. She was just, on some random website that someone had recommended, and you can get a free chart interpretation. She's like had her chart done like so many times, but this is just a new website or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she puts it in and it automatically used like Regiomontanus house system and not Placidus, and she's like, what the hell, like who even uses that, why would the like it's so random, and that was like their default, like what. It makes no sense. And house systems is another thing that people get super like heated about the debate.
Oh, I love it.
It's hilarious. Okay. Yeah, I think we've done an episode about house systems. And if we haven't, we will. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's another one, just like orbs, where people get like very emotional and weird about it.
Yeah. I bet. Yeah. Well, so
synastry. Synastry. What is... Okay, so synastry is a branch of astrology that focuses on the comparison analysis of two or more individuals' birth charts to gain insight into the dynamics of their relationship. Yes, this is exactly true, but what is the etymology?
Well, let's find out. We'll find out.
We will. Yeah. We're not going to rest until we find out.
I know.
Okay. It's an astrological term coming ultimately from the Greek synastria, a noun compounded of the Greek preposition and suffix syn, which means with. So completely naturalized in English, the Greek noun astro, star, familiar in astronomy, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, with okay, interesting. So it's with, which is syn, and then astri, which is like astro, with the stars, or
okay,
together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So synastry means when you combine your charts. Yeah.
Easy peasy. Now exactly. We learned something new, and it has nothing to do with sinister.
No, but it does rhyme. Or
yeah.
What's the word when it, yeah. It sounds similar.
Yeah, but different.
But different.
Got it.
Exactly. So I think that was, yeah, we've gone through oppositions and squares. Mm-hmm. So we've done a little like definition of mm-hmm. all of the major aspects now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's take some examples of using Mercury and Mars as our two mm-hmm. planets. So Mercury moves really quickly, and each of these aspects is going to occur probably like once a year, I think. I should have looked that up, but regardless, they're not super uncommon. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking at your chart, you're probably going to have Mercury aspecting something. You're going to have Mars aspecting something, but you might definitely not always have them together. So some people have Mercury and Mars aspecting each other, and some people don't. Mm-hmm. And out of those, you can have either a conjunction or an opposition or a square, or you might have like a minor aspect, like a biquintile, which we're definitely not going to talk about today.
What?
You're like, what? No, this isn't what I agreed to.
You know, when you're in that elementary school and you have to write down little words that you don't understand what they are. And
oh, like, God.
You have to define them, and that's what your homework is.
Katya scribbles yes. biquintile.
Yes. Every time I talk to you, it doesn't... I learn a new word. You're like the human calendar, you know, the one that's like, that's got the new word to use.
Yeah,
like
the word of the day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. I love that about you. Thank you.
Thank you. So synastry is one and biquintile. Yeah. We're not going to talk about biquintiles today.
Not this time.
One day, maybe.
Okay. I hope so.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what that is.
Exactly. Yeah.
But not today.
I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah. So Mercury, Mars aspects. Tell us more.
Okay, so Mercury is the messenger of the gods, just mm-hmm. like to define Mercury. It is about your communication. It's about your writing style. It's about your self-expression, mm-hmm. your humor, your body language. It's about how you speak, whether mm-hmm. you speak with your hands, like I'm doing constantly.
So telling of you.
Exactly. And I do have Mercury conjunct my sun. So that's something that a lot of people have that because Mercury is never more than two signs away from the sun. You're either going to have it conjunct your sun or it's mm-hmm. going to be like one sign in either direction. Because if you think about where Mercury is in the solar system, it's right there next to the sun. So from the perspective of us on Earth, you're either going to see like no Mercury because mm-hmm. the sun is there and mm-hmm. Mercury is just a teeny little black dot that's barely even visible, or you're going to have it be like just a teeny bit to the left or the right of it. Mm-hmm. You're never going to see it like on the other side of the solar system.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but Mercury and Mars is a bit different because Mars is obviously over there. And I'm doing this thing with my hands, which is very Virgo Mercury kind of thing.
We should do video podcasting.
Exactly. One day we will. It's a lot more work. And then I'd have to worry about my hair. Blah, blah,
which
blah.
Which is beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. There's, I like, yeah, a little pink on the ends. But
stunning.
Thanks. Okay, so we've done Mercury. Now, Mars, obviously, is the planet mm-hmm. of aggression, of mm-hmm. drive, of activity, initiative, sexual conquest. Mm-hmm. And it can suggest the kind of man you're attracted to, mm-hmm. or it can suggest, and this is, you know, astrology is a bit sexist, whatever, but we do mm-hmm. say male and female. What we mean is the archetypes.
Yeah.
So you could be
more yin-yang.
Yeah. You could be whatever gender, any thing in between, but yeah. everyone has a Mars and everyone has a Venus, and that is like your passive attractiveness versus your aggressive going after what you want kind of thing, which is like the traditional old school Mad Men version of like male and female. But this is the energies that we're dealing with. Everybody has a Mars, everybody has a Venus, everybody has a Mercury, and they're all just
different
expressions
that.
Of the personality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you have Mars and Mercury together, you see initiative, aggressiveness, and intellect kind of combined.
Sounds
in a way.
Competitive.
Yeah, okay. It can be very competitive. And it's interesting because when they're conjunct, like let's just talk about the conjunction first because that's the 0 degrees. When we talk about any conjunction, it's those two planetary energies acting as one, right? So when you have Mercury conjunct Mars, you see that your energy and your activity and your communication are one drive. So if you have Mercury conjunct Mars in Aries, you're going to have a fiery, passionate, egotistical, kind of competitive person who is very forceful in the way they speak. Maybe they're very temperamental. They use their words as weapons. You know, they're very blunt. They're very like verbally aggressive, verbally charged. Someone that you maybe can't get a word in edgewise. Not like with me where I just babble, but someone who's, you know, their words are like cutting and sort of brusque. Or maybe they don't talk a lot, but when they do, they're very forceful and kind of blunt.
And to what end? Like, what's the point of this? It's just like they can't, it's impulsive, they can't control themselves?
When you
like,
have it in Aries, I would think maybe. If Mercury is conjunct Mars in Aries, for sure. If it's Mercury conjunct Mars in Libra, might be a very different sort of energy. They might still be a very blunt and brusque person, but when they are speaking, it comes across differently. Like it comes across in a more logical and more controlled and kind of more maybe calculating kind of way. Maybe somebody is really good at, I don't know, what kind of Libra.
Yeah.
Like this is what's so fun about astrology because you just kind of make up these interesting, as Stephen Forrest said, it's the aspects that make the sentences make sense, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, I guess what I'm wondering about specifically for my own selfish reasons is what does that person need? Like when, and how often does this happen? Like, is this like a once a year thing or once every 20 years thing?
Oh yeah. This is Mercury and Mars are very quickly moving. So it would be about like Mars takes, I think 2 years to go through the entire zodiac.
Okay.
So yeah, like, so every probably 2 years, I guess.
And if now somebody is, say with the first example, with the Aries example, Mercury, Mars.
Yeah.
Aspect in Aries, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Like, what are they looking for? Because they're, you know, behaving in a certain way that's true to them. But is it like that they want comfort? Is it that they're like,
they have to. It's like I think Popeye was like, I gotta be me. Or was it Popeye who said that? Or
Ken?
Ken?
No.
Ken
maybe
song.
Not Ken. No.
Yeah, definitely not the Ken song because he was definitely not like an alpha male. Even you know, he was only interested in the patriarchy when he thought it was about horses. And now we're just quoting the Barbie movie, but
wait, don't you have something about the Barbie movie that you wrote out?
Like I have a whole article about that, but mspink.net if anyone's interested.
I was gonna ask. Okay, so they're just looking to expend this energy that they have.
Exactly. And their words are fused with their initiative. So when they speak, it's coming from an egocentric, and they're not afraid to stand up for themselves. They might talk very quickly. They don't care if others agree with them. And sometimes they could be rash or tactless or sarcastic or even offensive, but very straightforward and blunt.
And with all due respect, like to the person experiencing that in that moment, whether they know it or not, if they are, you know, like super impulsive, impatient, overbearing in some way, competitive, actively pushing boundaries, you know, like whoever that person is in that moment, do we just like treat them like a tantrum? Like, yes, you know, like we'll just give you some nice calm energy and just let you expend that energy. And that's,
I think if you're dealing with someone with Mercury conjunct Mars, you definitely would want to not interrupt, not try to soothe them. You'd want to like because it's like a burst. It is almost like an Aryan kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think you'd want to kind of stand back. You don't want to match them, their energy.
Yeah.
Like that's the takeaway. If you're especially in a relationship with someone who has Mercury conjunct Mars, like that's something that is great to, you know, to be able to look at someone's chart and be like, okay, that's why when we get into an argument, they just immediately start yelling.
Yeah.
It's not because they hate me or they don't respect me, but that's their communication style. And their communication style is merged with their Mars.
Yeah.
So when they speak, it's going to be like from 0 to 10 immediately.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like, oh, they're, you know, they're mean or they're, but that's just how they communicate. Their communication is blended inextricably always with their Mars energy.
So it's nothing against you in particular as the receiver.
It may be cases, but that's just how they talk.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I think we all probably know people in our lives who, like, they get very fiery about any kind of topic. The minute that you talk about something with them, they're like 0 to 60 immediately. And you're like, oh, I don't, what did I do? But that's just how they talk. Like they're passionate about anything. Anything that they talk about, it's immediately going to be bound up with their ego and with their drive, their passion, their whatever.
Yeah, not to say this is good or bad, but this is one example with the Aries that it just helps us understand. Like you were telling me before that this is a great way to have another language to describe.
Exactly.
I like this. Okay.
And that's where our celebrity examples, you know, may come in handy.
Yeah.
Because we have people who have Mercury conjunct Mars, a few examples. Heath Ledger, John F. Kennedy, Meryl Streep, Salvador Dali, and Kendrick Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
And they might have it in, you know, all different signs. I didn't go that deeply into it. We could look that up. But it's an interesting thing just to think, okay, so these are people who are definitely known for their words in some cases. Even Salvador Dali, who's like a, you know, just a beautiful painter and artist, very fiery personality. Like he gave speeches. I still like to quote him. One of my favorite things that he ever said, which is just a weird thing to say, is, "I don't do drugs. I am drugs." like what? That's amazing. It's a great quote.
Yeah.
What a wonderful thing to say.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he probably is, right?
Yeah.
Like Salvador Dali for sure is drugs. But John F. Kennedy, I mean, a famous orator, like just absolutely to this day, like known for his wonderful speeches and for his wonderful presentation style, and not, you know, a violent, like, you know, you don't think of him as like a super aggressive person, but you think of him as someone who's convincing, you know, like when he spoke, people would like listen, and people are still quoting him to this day.
Yeah.
And part of that is the charm and, you know, that Gemini, because he was a Gemini, but the other part is probably to do with that Mercury conjunct Mars, where you want to listen to what he has to say because he believes it, you know.
Yeah.
And Meryl Streep, too. That's a great example. And Heath Ledger, who, you know, was like such a wonderful like actor, and he won an Oscar after he was, you know, after he passed away. Like that's a very powerful sort of Mercury conjunct Mars thing there, where you believe what they're saying, you know.
Oh, and I just got sad for a second. I was like, I wish he knew.
I know.
Yeah.
I know, right?
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the conjunction.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you for explaining that. That was a lot.
Exactly. And I mean, that's the strongest of all the aspects.
Yeah.
So the rest of them, it's a little easier to describe.
Yeah.
And we can kind of do them in pairs. So we'll do the soft aspects next.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sextile and the trine. Mm-hmm. And as we said, the sextile is 60 degrees, the trine is 120 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
With the soft aspects, you're going to find Mercury and Mars create an alert and active mind, an affluent conversationalist, someone who's brisk and lively and has an active mental life and an easy communication style.
Mm-hmm.
They express their opinions freely, independently and easily, and they might be very good with their hands. So it's not just about your speaking style, but it's Mercury is about, it's also about like dexterity.
Oh,
so you could be like really good with your hands. And the difference between the trine and sextile in this case would be more easily felt by the person, because we don't really know what their interior life is like, but you might just describe it as it's a soft aspect. Trine and sextile are going to be very similar. But, you know, there's a little bit of a difference depending on especially what signs they're in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the trine, both planets will be in the same element. So, for example, you'd have maybe Mercury in Leo and Mars in Sagittarius, or Mercury in Libra and Mars in Aquarius. And obviously those will be very different. Mm-hmm. And someone with those combinations would maybe express their intellect in a very earthy way or in a very, you know, fiery way, depending. Yeah. It's like, if it's a trine, that's going to be what you want to look at, is like, okay, what element is it in? Mm-hmm. Are they a very earthy speaker? Are they a very airy speaker? Are they, you know, very philosophical and kind of mental?
Yeah.
Or are they very fiery in their communication style? And that's going to be coming through with the trine.
Mm-hmm.
With sextile, it's a little bit different because they might have maybe a more creative kind of speaking style. So maybe you'd have Mars in Libra and Mercury in Tucson.
Oh, I wish I could help.
Leo, I know.
I will believe whatever you say.
Whatever you say, exactly. So maybe Mercury in Leo, which is a fire sign, and Mars in Libra, which is an air sign. So they're both masculine, but their kind of relationship with each other, but they're not super flowing. So it's a little bit more of a friction, but it's
they're
friction
supportive, but not...
not the same,
yeah.
not too similar.
Okay.
Yeah. And that would obviously have a very different personality from someone if they had like Mars and Sagittarius, but you might find that same thing where they're very freely, independently, you know, expressing their opinions and their communications just very easy and kind of like... kind of friendly and, you know, an exciting speaker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So from celebrity examples with Mercury trine Mars, we've got Miley Cyrus, Jennifer Lopez, Jennifer Lawrence, the J-Lo and J-Law, both Franklin D. Roosevelt, and George Orwell.
Okay.
That's interesting. And it's like, I didn't look up what sign they actually are this, but it's interesting because if you compare then like Franklin Roosevelt, who has the Mercury trine Mars, with John F. Kennedy, who had Mercury conjunct Mars, you see, like, they're both very great orators, but you can still, like, you can still see kind of a difference in those energies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we still quote both of them, but Franklin Roosevelt had kind of more of a fatherly and soothing kind of speaking style, even when he was like talking about war and the speech that he gave after the attack on Pearl Harbor and all that stuff. But it's not like this sort of fiery oratory kind of style. It's more of a comforting kind of thing,
which is like grandpa.
Grandpa.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Grandpa Frankie.
And then celebrities who have Mercury sextile Mars are Beyonce, Princess Diana, Katy Perry, Prince, Sharon Stone, Jay-Z, Bill Clinton, and Sean Penn.
Beyonce and Jay-Z?
Right. Interesting, huh? I mean, that's one of those things, too, where you kind of go, I wonder if these things are attractive to, like, the similar types, right?
Yeah.
It's you see that a lot when you look at comparing two people's charts, not in a synastry, but when you just look at them side by side.
Mm-hmm.
People who are couples, you often see similar aspects. That's one of the things they have in common is, and it obviously depends on the aspect, because there can be difficult aspects that attract each other to each other as well.
Yeah.
Like maybe two people had like a difficult childhood and that's something that they bond over. And, and you see, maybe they both have like the moon in a difficult aspect to Saturn, or the moon in a difficult aspect to, you know, one of the outer planets. And one of the things they have in common that brings them kind of together and brings some comfort is that they both had a difficult childhood or a difficult relationship with their parents. And then that's one thing that they kind of bond over. You see that also with like, you know, communication style. Sometimes obviously opposites can attract too, but you know,
but you still need something to bond over.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you have one person who is this Mercury conjunct Mars kind of person where they're very forceful, and maybe that wouldn't be great if they're both like that. Or maybe we've all probably known couples where they seem to be fighting all the time, but they're not. Like, that's just how they talk, and they both kind of get loud and kind of compete verbally.
Yeah.
And maybe they both have, like, Mercury aspecting Mars in an interesting way in their charts.
Yeah. They probably have something else that we don't see that they're so compatible.
Totally.
With,
yeah, or they just don't see it as fighting. You know, they just see, like, oh, we're just spirited, you know?
There is this concept of, like, oh, we never fight. Like, that's not a good thing that you never fight.
Right?
Like, I don't mind it. It's like, it's
everything
passionate.
Is just, exactly.
Exactly. Okay.
And that might be a thing too, where like someone who has, you know, a lot of trines in their chart, or especially like Mercury trine Mars, like they'll speak very soothingly, and maybe the other person has something like where it's more of a square aspect, and so they're more aggressive in their thing, and they kind of offset each other. That's why it's so funny. It's people, when they're just starting to learn about astrology, they think, oh, is that a bad thing? Yeah. No, nothing's a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, like you can work with it, but that's why it's great to know, you know, because then you can kind of create stories and help understand yourself and another person.
I can't help but feel like this is therapy.
Oh my God. Yeah, totally.
Why does this feel therapeutic? This is nice.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It's kind of funny too, because like a lot of the astrology books I learned on, and probably most of the people who are like listening, either, you know, are quite a bit younger than me or like a little bit older than me, but people in the 60s and 70s who were writing about astrology, the books that I grew up reading, they all started out as psychologists or counselors in some way, like most of them.
Wow.
Yeah, like Stephen Arroyo, who I quote all the time, I believe was a psychologist. And I could be wrong about that. And I'm not going to look it up right now.
Yeah.
If we'll I'm wrong, I don't want to know.
Yeah.
But yeah, like counseling and psychology. And it was that's compared to what astrology used to be, like back in the day before it kind of had this renaissance in the 60s, it used to be considered a prediction. What's going to happen? What's going to happen to me? Or like, what's your fate or destiny? And also like people who, you know, powerful leaders in the past, they would have an astrologer who would be like, oh, this is bad. You know, like this guy should not be the ruler, or, you know, his brother should be, or like, we really have to watch out around this time because he could be assassinated, blah, blah, blah. Like it was all about prediction and, you know, ameliorating like weaknesses and making sure that the state or the nation would be taken care of, because like if you have someone in power who's got a really quote unquote like bad chart, as they would say, you know, like that's dangerous. Like you want to, you know, have your ruler be like a long life and not be assassinated and not whatever, take the country to war. Yeah. And if they do take the country to war to win, you know, but like nowadays it's much more about like, what is my personality? Why am I like this? Who can I get along with? How can I get along with people better? Like, that's what we care about with astrology now. It's not like so much about predicting death and illness. And I mean, obviously some people are super into
still into it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Very cool. Those were the soft aspects. Let's do the squares and oppositions. So they're similar, as we talked about, when you have Mars and Mercury in squares and oppositions, they can be a combative, egotistical, and aggressive temperament. They can be like the kind of person who is just constantly kind of like going to battle with people, the guy in the bar who getting into arguments. And these people are maybe unable to control their communication style, and they may behave in an irritable, temperamental, rash, and hot-headed fashion. And this is just their personality. That's just how they are. They don't necessarily mean to fight, but that's just what happens. And the important difference between the hard aspects comes when you think about the signs involved. So someone who, for example, has Mercury opposite Mars and they're in Gemini and Sagittarius exhibit like that opposition very differently from someone who has like Gemini square Mars in like Virgo, Mercury in Gemini square Mars in Virgo, or Mars in Pisces, for example, like very different than that that opposition Gemini-Sagittarius. So Gemini-Sagittarius opposition, they could be like a really lively, adventurous kind of speaker. They would love like wordplay and banter and like, you know, word games maybe. Or they could write like incredible adventure stories and tell people about their exploits and be like a really prolific kind of writer or conversationalist. So that's like Gemini and Sagittarius combined. And maybe if they have Mercury in Gemini and Mars in Virgo, they would be like less extroverted about it, but maybe similar in a writing. Like they could be a prolific writer and write about adventures and stuff like that, but not necessarily the kind of person who wants to tell you like verbally about it.
Oh.
Because Virgo is more introverted kind of Mars, right?
Yeah,
so it'll really depend on what sign they're in. Yeah, so let's do our celebrities. Celebrities with Mercury opposite Mars are Cate Blanchett, Christina Ricci, Nina Simone, Ice Cube, Alice Cooper, and Tucker Carlson.
What?
I know, right? As we were talking about before, like it's hard to kind of, with celebrities, especially with negative or, you know, hard aspects, it's hard to know if they've spent like their entire life trying to be less combative, maybe. Who knows? Like, you know, someone like Ice Cube, maybe you could see like a really aggressive, you know, kind of energy when he was younger, and now he's like kind of got this dad energy, and he's like, we're soft, but he's still, you know, his kind of like troubled youth or whatever. And obviously like Tucker Carlson is still like out there, you know, making enemies, but also friends. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, he's definitely, you can see that polarization, right? Like he definitely has that kind of personality where people either love him or hate him or like used to hate him and now kind of respect him grudgingly, which is probably the camp that I'm in.
But polarizing.
Polarizing, yes. Exactly. And I mean, that's a really good word for an opposition. Any opposition is mm-hmm. polarizing. And then celebrities with Mercury square Mars, Michael Jackson, Marilyn Manson, Pamela Anderson, Sean Connery, Warren Buffett, Conor McGregor, Tom Brady, and Anthony Bourdain. And the interesting thing here is not so much how they come across to others, but what it feels like for them. And I think one thing that you can definitely say about all of those people is that they've been misunderstood by a lot of people, or they've gone out of their way to be aggressive and combative, like in the case of Tom Brady, Conor mm-hmm. McGregor, Anthony Bourdain. Mm-hmm. They've kind of made a point of being abrasive, you know, in their career or in their communication style, or they've, you know, maybe accidentally stumbled into that kind of thing, like Sean Connery, who apparently has said some things that were so offensive and, you know, got himself canceled like so many times, but is still super charming. Mm-hmm. Or someone like Pamela Anderson or Michael Jackson, where their internal self has a lot of conflicts and people are very polarized about how they feel about them, but it's not necessarily because of the way they are. It's just because of how they make us feel in a weird way, you know?
Yeah. It feels like there's a lot in common with them, but I can't quite pinpoint.
Yeah. It's a weird one. It's a weird one. And it would super depend on like what signs they're in. But Marilyn Manson is another great example because he's just a performer, whatever, but people have very polarizing opinions of him just based on him being such an extreme, people who kind of get you kind of riled up and everyone feels a little differently about them.
Yeah.
That's Mercury in a tough relationship with Mars. Mm. It's great examples of that.
Yeah. I guess there's a chance that these dynamic conversations will be like full of banter, but also maybe impatience if the partner's too slow or something like that.
Exactly. And I mean, of course, that would depend on the other person.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why you want to look at both charts.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else to know about this? I know.
No, that is all. That is everything.
My notes are so long.
I know, right? that we covered a lot, but mm-hmm. I think it was really good to go through all the different aspects of the big five.
Yeah.
And sort of just go through the subtle differences when you're thinking about two planets and just like, I think we covered it.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
This was really fun, Arwen.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for joining me. So that's it for our deep dive into the major aspects. And if you have any questions about anything and you'd like us to cover it in a future episode, you can go to starsology.com. And in, I think, the bottom right corner, there is a little comment thing. So you can also email us at starsology@gmail.com.
Sounds good. Starsology.
Yeah.
Signing off.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks so much for getting this far through the episode. I just want to take a moment to tell you about the two main options of my astrology services. So the first one is coaching. If you are an aspiring astrologer, and by that I mean someone who's perhaps a hobbyist astrologer or someone who's learning astrology or a student, or you've got a few books and you've been doing it for a while, but perhaps you need a little bit of help to bring it all together, then maybe getting some astrological coaching from me would be the answer for you. The astrology coaching I offer is a one-hour session on Zoom, and it's tailored to answer your particular questions. For example, if you have issues with natal chart readings, we can go there. Or if you're having problems working with your forecasting, we can go there. Or even basic astrology stuff, or even getting yourself organized for your astrology business. The idea is that astrological coaching will answer your particular questions. It's tailored specifically to you and where you are in your astrological journey. And I'm happy to help you out with some guidance about how you can get going, what to focus on, and what to dismiss. So that would be the astrological coaching for people trying to learn astrology. The second astrological service I offer is consultations. So this is for someone who perhaps doesn't know anything about astrology, but they just want to have their chart read or get their chart done. Call it what you will. So once more, this is a 1-hour consultation over Zoom. I will interpret your chart, tell you about the main features, tell you about where the energy is flowing, and all the rest of what is entailed in a thorough natal chart interpretation. I can also add in some forecasting in there too, bearing in mind we only have 1 hour. So just in summary, I've got coaching for people who want to learn astrology, and I've got consultations for those who want to get an astrology reading done. I'm Alison Price from starsology.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.